name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And I've had a very busy week. I mean, I do have an ex that liked that nickname.
But somewhere out there, there's like an apiarist who's just laughing. And, but...
Maybe you have one listener who's an apiarist.
Is it an apiarist? I know an apiary is a bee house or a place that keeps bees. An apist? That doesn't sound right.
No, that doesn't sound right. Wouldn't it just be beekeeper?
Beekeeper.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The keeper of the bees.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've had a very busy week. And not much going on in the gay news, not as much as I would like.
Most of it's ongoing stuff where this politician in this country is working on this policy and the opposing party is resisting. Oh, I think Sackville,
New Brunswick just had their pride.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff where the story is this thing is ongoing.
Yeah, and France is looking at banning conversion therapy as a country, which is interesting, but they haven't done it yet.
But until, exactly. Which may or may not happen, and if it doesn't happen, it's not a story. If it does happen, it's definitely a story, but it may or may not happen, we don't know. It's still being spoken about. Seems to be the crux.
The gist of it.
Yeah, now, there's stories from Japan that are like that, too. It just goes on.
But I was in the Yukon Territory recently.
Okay.
I got back yesterday.
Out in the tundra.
There was no tundra there.
Oh.
We drove past the desert.
So you were in the northern boreal forest.
No.
No, that would have been the northern coniferous forest, actually, because the northern boreal is more southern.
I was in the Yukon.
Okay.
Just outside, sort of car across that, kind of just outside White Horse City, they have a desert, like an actual sandy desert in the middle of the...
There's a golf course there. And you have to carry your own patch of grass to tee off of.
Not in this bit of desert, but no, there was...
Well, I mean, did you explore the entire desert?
Yeah, it's not that big. We flew over it.
Okay.
You could see the whole circumference. Apparently, it's sand generated from retreating glaciers is what created this...
fancy that.
Desert, little mini desert in the middle of the Yukon. But there were some things that happened on my little travels about which really jumped out at me. One of the things that I noticed...
Did it frighten you? It was just like, wah!
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. One of the things that occurred to me very quickly was right in Whitehorse, which is, you know, you can't get much more rural and remote than the territories. I mean, Northwest Territory, Yellowknife, much more rural and remote.
On a global scale, it's hard to get more rural.
Yeah, I mean, Nunavut is also quite rural. Out of the territories, I think... The Yukon is the most accessible. Like, for example, Life has one road of entry, whereas White Horse has three roads of entry.
Ooh la la, so, moving up in the world.
Yeah, they have all kinds of options.
Do they have stoplights on those three roads?
They do. Well, we went to Dawson City, and there's no stoplights and no street sign. There are some street signs, but there's no paving, no roads, like paved roads, and no stop signs.
It's just gravel.
Yeah, dirt. It's a dirt road.
Oh.
And in the middle, around the city...
All right.
Because it's too remote. Imagine the river is road number zero, and every road coming out is 1, 2, 3, 4, and it stops at 8.
Okay.
Because then there's the airport, and then there's only like maybe 5 blocks horizontal.
Widthwise, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really not that big. But in one of these roads where they cross, is the cross section, and they had 2 rainbow flag crosswalks, and 2 trans flag crosswalks.
Okay.
Which, that jumped out to me. Because, I mean, the Yukon Territory is quite remote. It's quite small population. I think they're like 50,000 or something.
So the trans crosswalks were to celebrate all of the trans...
All 2 of them.
Yeah, Alex, this...
This is for you.
This crosswalk is for Alex and Jesse. And
Jesse can have that one over there. But, I mean, it was funny. I was talking to somebody on the bus about it, and I didn't know they had the crosswalk, but we were talking on the bus driving through, and I said, you know, it's 1 in 100 are in some way sex non-conforming.
Yeah, gender non-conforming.
Well, specifically sex and gender non-conforming.
So
You think of like athletes who get gender tested and one of their chromosomes are off and so on. You know, it's all the way from that through to what we would now call intersex.
Yeah.
And then also gender dysphoria and trans. So it's a big basket where we're including these 1 in 100.
Yeah.
Because they were like, wow, that would be like, there's like 30 or 40 trans people. I'm like, no. There's 30 or 40 people who aren't biologically exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
You know, with variations somewhere around that, you know?
And that's assuming a randomized distribution on an average population. That's also assuming that people who are trans or gender nonconforming haven't moved, exactly.
Because, moved out or moved in.
Because when people do that, they say, you know, the number of homosexuals in a population, gay men, is one of the more studied ones because we kind of stick out like a sore thumb. It's anywhere from 2.5 to 5% of a population, depending on who's counting.
Yeah.
And depending on how they're counting. But that is like 2.5% over all of Canada, but it's not evenly distributed. I mean,
if you're stood in Davie Village in Vancouver, I'm confident that more than 2% of the population are going to be gay.
You're edging up towards like 80 or 90% of the men there are probably, you know.
Like I say, it very much depends on the space. But one of the things that jumps out is I was like, wow, that's really, it's really quite something. I wasn't expecting it.
This is why people should learn math and stats, by the way, and learn how it actually applies to the real world. But anyway, yeah, no, it is. It's. I mean, how much of it seemed like cynical optics, and how much of it seemed like the community was involved?
A part of that occurs to me like, okay, well, maybe this is, you know, for the tourists. They get lots of tourists coming through. But at the same time, the average age in Whitehorse is 35.
Oh. Okay.
There is so much entrepreneurialism in Whitehorse. Okay. It is astonishing. Everyone we spoke to was like, yeah, you know, they came up from Edmonton. They had one room where they had a little cocktail bar.
Okay.
And now they've teamed up with a brewery and it's a whole, almost a building that they, you know, it's an event space and maker space and cocktails and, you know, it's all of these things. And there's a very large degree of innovation. Like the average artist population in a city is maybe less than 1%.
Okay.
That's people who... Stats Canada, occupation, I make enough money that I am professionally an artist. Whereas in the Yukon, it was 4%. You're going to fact check me right now.
No, there is a most northern university in, not Canada.
There was a college in Dawson City.
In stupid autocomplete. Come on, man. Wake yourself up. Tromsø, that's it. Okay, Tromsø, Norway, most northern major city in Europe. And something crazy like a quarter of the bands from Norway that go international are from Tromsø. It would be like if 20% of the Canadian music scene was, you know, from specifically Iqaluit or something like that. And it's just that the music scene there is so tightly knit, and it's above the Arctic Circle. It's one of the few parts of Norway that is. So they get the long nights and the long days, and there's not much else to do. So the music scene is incredibly enriched. So,
well, that's what jumped out to me about Whitehorse as well, because you know they get like 4 or 5 hours of sun in the winter, and in the summer it's all from June 1st through to, you know, the second week of September, nonstop bus tours and tourists and tourists and tourists and tourists. And, you know, you're out, go fishing because you can still see the fish because it's so bright. It's the all night sun.
Yeah.
You know, so they do all of their outdoor stuff in the summer. And then in the winter, you know, you only get a couple of hours. So you're hunkered down. They're crafting, they're building, they're planning new things, they're creating. There's a lot of Music Yukon.
I wonder how many people go there to see penguins and then are very disappointed.
Really disappointed, yeah.
It's a southern hemisphere animal, yeah.
Yeah. That'd be hilarious.
Apparently, Patagonia, which is the furthest southern point of South America, is lousy with penguins to the point where they treat penguins the way that we treat, like, squirrels. Where it's just like, there's a bloody penguin in my attic. Yeah.
it was an interesting story about the Falkland Islands. So in the Malvinas, I think is what the Argentinians call it. And it's during Thatcher years, it was the Falklands War between Britain and Argentina, because Britain claimed this tiny rock with nothing on it, the coast of Argentina.
Yeah.
And it was because they claimed that they were there, whereas the Argentinians never, they claimed the island, but there was nobody ever on the island. But maybe they fished around it. Who knows? Whatever. It's a big territorial dispute. And then during Thatcher years, the Argentinians thought that they would just steal it back, which is fine.
Okay.
You know, you do you. Except the Brits were like, no, we will protect the people of Argentina, of the Falklands, sorry. And they sent warships in. It was a big war. Whatever. The Argentinians occupied the island.
Nothing on the island but guano? Like, it was just a poop repository for bats and penguins.
Yeah, and like, the odd sheep. Now there is a small population there who are clinging to being British. Honestly, I think territories like that, you know, we should have, like, Hong Kong agreements where you slowly give them back to the country that that makes more sense than, like, an island a bajillion miles away. But my point is that in the aftermath of this war, there were so many landmines all over the island that people could only really stick to, like, the village and the port, and they couldn't wander anywhere else, or you'd get blown up by these landmines. So now the Falkland Islands is a haven for penguins.
Okay.
Because the penguins don't set off the landmines.
Maybe if you put tiny little weighted backpacks on the penguins, make them a little bit heavier. And it would be adorable because they'd be wearing little backpacks.
And then they toodle along and then they blow up.
And then they explode, yeah.
Yeah, maybe let's not blow up penguins.
But yeah, well, it's gore comedy. It's only funny if it's not real. Yeah. Actually, I completed my triumvirate recently. So every year I make a strong point to watch at least one Canadian movie because I want to support the Canadian film industry. I watch at least one movie that was made before I was born, and I watch at least one movie with subtitles, and that's just like to be cultured. And I recently watched my three movies for the year, but the Canadian one that I saw was called Turbo Kid. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of it. It didn't. It made waves in the independent film fan circles, and I highly recommend it to any listeners, by the way. And it's kind of like a Mad Max post-apocalyptic. They didn't really get into detail. It was clear there was some kind of a war or something. Half the world was desert and the world had run out of petroleum. But unlike Mad Max, the world had actually run out of petroleum. And the other thing, petroleum doesn't have a shelf life. If you just leave gas in your car, it will degrade. And after about 2 months, it's not usable anymore. So the entire movie is like this Mad Max style, you know, people wearing sports equipment with razor blades sticking out of it, kind of a post-apocalyptic movie. And everyone's on a BMX because there's no gas. Mm-hmm. So you have like these roaming bandits of like murderous cannibals, and they're on like little pink BMXs with like the streamers. It's so adorable. And so, and it's I bring it up because it was gore comedy. There were so many dummies exploding in half with blood everywhere. And when you see a dummy getting cut in half, like there's something like, yeah, about it. Like, I'm anti-violence, but when you see a dummy get its head cleft vertically down and a giant cannon of blood shoots out the top, it's kind of awesome. I recommend it. I do recommend Turbo Kid for sure. It was a movie that was made with heart. The people who made it clearly loved the movie and knew what it was. They knew what they were getting into. It was good, yeah.
So one of the things that occurred to me whilst I was out in the Yukon. Also, I went up to Dawson City, which is like the only paving in the entirety of Dawson City is the runway. I think they have one road that has a very special kind of road. It's because it's on permafrost. Right. So the ground like freezes and unfreezes and freezes and unfreezes. Yeah. That all of the buildings have to be on little log rolls so that they can move with the ground.
Okay.
And anything that's like bolted down will move and break essentially.
That would be frostquake territory as well. So yeah. Where my family's from in Western Quebec, they get frostquakes there, and it is so incredibly localized. I remember once I was visiting my grandpapa, and we're in the basement was where they had like the living room and stuff like that. We were sitting around chain smoking, playing cards, drinking coffee.
Very French.
And all of a sudden, like, the house just started shaking so aggressively that like glasses flew out the cupboards. The house next door felt nothing. Like, this is how localized a frost quake is. And it's just, it's some of the ground is frozen and some of it is not frozen, and it expands and it's soft, and then you get like the two frozen parts rubbing up against each other, and it's basically like an earthquake on a very small scale using frozen ground.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And when I got to Japan and I was in my first earthquake and I was totally chill, people like, you know, the Japanese were like, but Westerners freak out in earthquakes. And I was like, yeah, I've been through this before. And it was just like, you know, if the building was going to collapse, it would have done it by now. So I'm just going to hang out
if
here.
The building was going to collapse, then locals would have got out.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, I was in a little pond hopper going through Vietnam, and I was in the back of it. It's very humid in Asia, to know folks and all that.
Yeah. It's incredibly
and
humid.
It pressurized the cabin, right, so that it can fly.
Right.
Except all of the air comes billowing out the sides of the top of where you put like your luggage.
Okay.
The luggage thingies up at the top of the seats.
Okay.
Forget what the word is. Overhead luggage compartment.
Yeah.
Except that's where the air comes out to pressurize it. Except you would never have known, except for in an extremely humid country where it looks like it's billowing smoke out of the top of these luggage compartments. And I'm freaking out until I look around and notice nobody else freaking out. And I'm like, okay, maybe it's me. If you're ever in a different country, don't freak out until the locals freak out, and then you know you should.
I feel
be.
Like we should finish the story about the crosswalks and
Yeah. So we went to Dawson, which like there's no roads. It's all very very gold rush, timesy oldie kind of thing.
Timesy oldie
kind of thing. Yeah.
You are not editing that out. Am I editing this week?
I might be able to do it.
Okay.
So anyway, we. What was I saying? Yeah.
How did they paint the? Did they just like? Get colored stones and just like put gravel road with colored stones.
The painted sidewalk was in Whitehorse, which actually has lots of streets, lots of street lights. It's a it's a relatively modern city. It's fine.
Okay.
Whereas Dawson is not. But in a lot of the art and cultural spaces, they had those rainbow flags on the wall. I think UConn has its own organization or group that comes around and has its own little specific heart shaped rainbow flag. And that's something that jumped out at me, is that there's a lot of spaces and there's a lot of places that I would not expect to see visible signs of being pro-LGBT.
Okay.
Where it was.
Okay.
Like sidewalks in Whitehorse, the sides of buildings in Dawson, and even up in Carcross, you know, these quite remote areas that you can't accidentally go to Dawson. You have to plan to go there. You know what I mean? You won't drive through these communities unless maybe you're really far off.
Well, I mean, you say that, but there is a community in Newfoundland that for the longest time was so well known for the fact that people only ever went there by accident that they renamed the town to Come By Chance. It's in a valley, and I actually knew somebody from Come By Chance, and he was in a 25-year committed relationship with somebody from Fairyland.
That's pretty funny.
I know. I love the city names in Newfoundland. They're
so
wonderful.
I want to talk about self censoring when we get back. But okay. We're going to jump to Dreamland by the Chapot Boys, the Pet Shop Boys. There we go. And this is a duet. This is a song that they did with Years and Years, which you may be familiar with Ollie Alexander. I think there's like two twinkish singers that have kind of been pushing LGBT rights. In the States, it's Troye Sivan.
Okay.
He's been really kind of pushing it. He had that song Bloom, which is just a giant metaphor. And he's kind of been pushing these boundaries. I think he just did a duet with a woman who did Senorita with Shawn Mendes, Camila Cabello. But anyway, and then...
Shrug emoji.
In the UK, you have Years and Years, which has like the violins in it. It's kind of I'll play you a clip later. And Ollie Alexander has been a real vocal advocate in the UK.
Okay.
But it's weird that they both kind of have similar presences about them. But this is a team up with a very young modern band and the Pet Shop Boys, which I may not describe that way. And this is the song Dreamland. I think it's a great track. We'll be back just after this.
I heard there's I'm going to still be here.
Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. And actually, this might be apocryphal.
Oh dear.
But how the Pet Shop Boys got together, one of them was a music critic, the singer, and then I think it was the actual keyboardist who was a music critic. And he was complaining about the low quality of music in the early 80s. And then apparently another critic said to him, you know, those who don't should not be overly critical of those who do. And I don't think you could do better. And then he said, well, let's see. And then formed the Pet Shop Boys and came out with a whole bunch of hits. So
did quite well, actually.
Did very well, yeah. And also, I'd like to do a correction of a mistake that I made 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
I meant to do it last week, but I forgot. Liberace was actually gay. I was...
When you said he wasn't, that's weird, because Swanee was gay.
Yeah, no, he is. It is true that Depeche Mode is not gay, but in the back of my mind, there was a skit in Kids in the Hall where Scott Thompson, in the role of Eddie? No, I can't remember his... Buddy Cole, in the character of Buddy Cole, said that he didn't want Liberace to be gay because he loved the idea of a straight man who was like that. And that was sort of like in the back of my mind. And it was like, yeah, no, Liberace's not gay. He totally was gay. But it's just that Buddy Cole joke of, I just wish he weren't. Because for the laugh of it, you know?
Yeah.
There are a lot of gay men who are... No, a lot of straight men who read as gay. Like not the main guy, the other guy on Will and Grace...
Oh, yeah.
The super gay acting guy?
Yeah.
Who's actually straight?
Yeah.
But do you know Will. Who... Do you... No.
The guy who plays Will.
No. Will, the other guy is straight as well. They're both straight.
No.
I think so. Oh, right. No,
the guy
okay.
who plays Will is straight.
That's right. Will is straight. And do you know who tried out for that role and got turned down?
I vaguely recall it.
John Barrowman.
Yeah, actually, a whole bunch of what are now quite prominent gay actors applied for that role.
Yeah, and didn't make it, yeah.
Well, so let's move on. Are you familiar with the term self-censoring?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So essentially this came up recently in conversation because we just talked about crosswalks in Whitehorse and pride flags on buildings in Dawson City. And these are all little symbols of, you know, this is a welcoming space and so on. And I've spoken to quite a lot of... straight people recently. I do that from time to time. And they were saying to me, you know, why do we need all of these crosswalks? And don't get me wrong, I think some...
You and I also say that sometimes. Yeah.
And I think that there are some LGBT advocates who now see it as, not having a crosswalk means that you're, you know, literally the worst.
Yeah.
You know, this is oppressive. And it's like, no, we, no, you know, we don't have an inherent right to multicolored bits of road.
Yeah.
Like, that's not. Let's be honest here. When it comes to the gay rights movement, we do have extremes, and insisting on painted roads might be one of them.
In Canada, when the police start arresting you for holding the hand of somebody of the same gender as yourself,
then
it's time for concern. Yeah,
absolutely. But no, if you don't get a painted road, then maybe not. But I think what a painted road is it's a symbol. It's a symbol of a conversation that's happened with that community. But it occurred to me that they were saying, you know, why do we need these things now? Canada's welcoming. Canada's fine. You can marry. You can adopt. Yeah. You can, you know, have a dog. You can move into your white picket fence house. Mm-hmm. You know, 2.5 children. These are all things that you can do now. It doesn't matter if you're gay or straight or what's all the fuss about.
And for most of Canada, that's true. But not all of it.
Well, even then, like we have been doing a gay radio show, and our regular listeners, I would believe, would assume that we are quite confident. We're out. We're both openly gay. You work for the Auto Police Service. You know, I worked for the Auto Police Service. You know, we're vocal. We're out there. We're present in the community.
Right.
However, you know, in my building where I read, right in the heart of the student part of Ottawa, major, you know, a metropolitan city-ish, you know, a couple of old women came in and were chatting away, and I find myself defaulting to, oh, my partner, or someone said, is it your roommate that also walks the dog? And I didn't correct her.
Yeah.
You know, it's little things like that. It's about not sharing information.
I mean, I've seen you and your partner together. Like, from the uninitiated point of view, you do come across as roommates sometimes. Because,
But when I was in Dawson, we were on a plane and somebody mentioned that their husband volunteers to do accounting for a church. And it was only after a little while that I realized that I was making all of references to my boyfriend, gender neutral. And I think, you know, this is me, and like, I've been out for years. I've marched in the parade. I've covered the parade.
You've organized the parade.
I've organized the parade. you know what I mean? I've paid my dues in the gay world, and yet I still find myself self-censoring around people. So my point here is, and I don't know if you've experienced this as well, that we are in a big urban, well, not big urban, we're in a big city. We are literally the organizers of Pride.
Right.
And yet we still, when we meet some people, it's some, you know, we're not saying that that woman in the elevator or the woman whose husband, you know, I'm not assuming they're homophobic.
Yeah.
But it's just better safe than sorry. And I think,
for me, you know, it's not better safe than sorry, though. For me, it's more like, I don't want to get into it. Because, like, I just recently started, I'm going back to school. I'm in college now. I'm learning an actual vocation that will get me an actual job that pays more than minimum wage when I graduate. And I'm not out yet to any of my classmates. And there's no reason not to be. It's just, at this point in time, I just don't feel like getting into it.
Because there could be, you know, sometimes it's just a hassle. There could be questions. There could be this, that, and the other. A lot of what we do is, I find our show sort of educational, you know.
Sort of educational.
It's like if you're two blocks away and you're sort of squinting at a school in the middle distance. Right. That's what our show is.
Okay.
We're sort of educational.
It's like contact education. Like, someone in the corner is having a little bit of education, and because you're in the same room as them, you get a little bit of learning.
Yeah, education by osmosis. Yeah, that's our show.
No, that was a marijuana joke.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Like a contact high.
Yeah, there you go. You got there eventually.
But
some of that is just the social effect of being the odd one out. So let's say you're in a group of people. How bizarre would it be to just stand up on your chair and announce to the room, by the way, everyone, I hate cats and I don't like dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you have a room of 50 people, everyone in that room is probably going to love one of those animals and grew up with one of those animals. And you get a few people who just hate pets. Like my sister-in-law just hates pets, which is tragic because my brother loves dogs.
No.
But anyway, like if you were to just say, by the way, everyone, I hate cats and I don't get dog ownership, you're going to stand out a bit. And it's just the idea of people want to belong with the group. They want to feel included. They don't want to stand out too much. You do get a few people who have the brass to just stand up and be like, you know, I know we're here to talk about independent film, but I just want everyone to know that I hate The Big Lebowski. So, I mean, that'd be so bizarre. And obviously, like, standing on a chair and saying, by the way, I love independent film, but I hate The Big Lebowski is not the same as saying I'm gay. But it is like when you say that you're gay, you're saying, by the way, room full of straight people, I am completely different from you in the following way. And yeah. There's that feeling of like outing yourself just as being completely different in one dimension. Now, obviously, I am not denying the existence of homophobia and all that, but that is just sort of that added social effect. There's no reason for me to be in the closet in class right now. And eventually, I'm probably going to come out because, you know me, I couldn't go back in the closet if I wanted to.
No, no. I don't think they make them in your size.
No,
now.
They really don't. I mean, again, I'm a big lad, so I mean, I would really be more like a wardrobe. But if
walk-in closet?
If you're hiding in the walk-in closet, you are not hiding from anyone. So I mean, that's... Then I'm going to be different. There's going to be people who are like, you're different in a way that doesn't bother me or affect me in any way. But yeah. If I'm the only gay, and... all 36 people in my class have all classes together. It is a program of 36 people. So I have 35 classmates, mm-hmm. and we do everything together. Like, we're having lunch with people we barely like because that's our universe right now. So, I mean, like, standing out, you know, it's a bit of a risk, but it's more the risk of standing out than it is the risk of rejection and homophobia. On top of that, you have homophobia. Religious conservatism, social conservatism, you know, rejecting people who are different, people who are, you get that sort of middle class white bourgeois thing where they're trying to be supportive, but it's the soft bigotry of low expectations kind of effect where people are trying to be supportive, but they end up accidentally being horrible. So you want to avoid...
I mean, it makes me think of that experience I had on this plane, you know, with a white woman whose husband was... volunteered with the church.
Right.
You know, as soon as she said that, I just, like I said, I self-censored. It was very much. But we were talking about vacations we'd taken. It was a very pleasant conversation.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm not going to stand on the chair in the middle of the plane and go, I'm a homosexual. You know, but at the same time...
You know I would.
You would. You know, any theatrical moment. But it's all about the idea of if I reveal that I, you know, the person I went to Montreal with was a man, is that going to end our pleasant conversation that we've had on this plane? You know, is she going to go, oh, okay, and then slowly tail off the conversation and read a book?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it may not be someone who's just straight up homophobic, but how normal people interactions become a bit of a minefield.
Sometimes it's not homophobia. Sometimes it's just they don't know what to talk about.
Yeah.
Because it's that thing, like when you get... I've lost friends, not lost friends, like they became enemies or something, but like we drifted off. The group that I used to hang out with when I was in Toronto, they've all gotten married to their partners and they have a mortgage and kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going back to school to start a new career. Like it's just a different lifestyle, a different universe, a different social circle, different everything. So half the time, like if you come out and people like, oh, they don't know how to process that. They don't know how to interact with you. And yeah. We will get to homophobia as a topic in a minute. I'm just saying, like, there are other factors as well. There's just the social factor of you are a minority if you are LGBT. Mm-hmm. And in the nature of being a minority, a little bit of self-censorship just falls out of that naturally.
Absolutely. I mean, I just think it was interesting because especially around these crosswalk debates, people are like, why do we need it? What? My mother said to me recently, you know, I don't need to know what you do in the bedroom. Like, that's not...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she's also my mother, so there's that dynamic. But she doesn't walk up to strangers and ask what they're doing in the bedroom. You know, that's... Unless you're a doctor where that's medically relevant, I don't think anyone should be, you know, walking up to strangers in the middle of the mall, you know.
Although I think in your case, there's a few things that you've announced that you're like, I hate... I'm not going to say it on the air, but there's certain... sexual things that you strongly dislike, and all the other gay men are like, what? How do you have a sex life when you refuse to do blah, blah, blah? And it's like, how do you have a sex life, by the way?
There are, you know, you're making it sound like I take a lot of options off the table. There's a lot of options on the table. If anybody wants to reach out to me, I'm at 6-1.
But the important ones are off the table.
No, they're not off the table. Let's move away from my sex life. Now, one of the things, but this jumps back at me. This is what's important here. You know, the idea of the assumption, like, case and point.
Yeah.
New story this week, which really didn't have enough meat and potatoes for us to really talk about, but now actually is relevant to the conversation,
okay,
was that there was a chief who was being interviewed. He was a new chief. He's just coming in. Chief of police.
Okay.
And I can't remember where it is. We'll look it up and link it on our website.
Right.
But
and what's your website for listeners?
www.kenqueer.news.
There you go.
And They were just asking him about working with the community, and because he's a new chief, and he said, what are you going to do about the LGBT community? And then he starts talking about anal sex. Like, that's, he just went straight there.
There comes a point where someone is just so offensive, you just have to laugh.
But, like, the guy just didn't get it. Yeah. He's like, LGBT, gay, anal sex. Like, that was his thought pattern.
Because that's, you know, lesbians are all about that anal sex. Some of them are, actually.
But that's the point. It's like, and then he got dragged over the coals. You know, I've worked with straight cops.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can see you talk to cops about the gay community, and the first thing they think of is the, you know,
sex in the public bathroom.
Sex in the public bathroom. It's a it is a huge problem, and it's often where police interact with the community.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes they show up at a pride parade, but on, you know, in the middle of November, they're most likely to come across a gay person or a person who are having same-sex relations in a public washroom. So it's like, I can see how he got there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like,
I mean, I don't blame the guy, but it's pretty unenlightened.
And that's the point here. It's like, you know, I can see that people are like, when they think gay people, some people jump to that. My mother's like, I don't need to know what you're doing in the bedroom. And this chief is like, gay people, right, yeah, no, you know, in the bushes, anal. And it's like, no, there's a lot more to it than that. We're real people, we're not, you know, that's a very tiny percentage of what we do.
I mean, on the other hand, there is that, like the social, like, as I was saying earlier, there's sometimes I don't want to get into it because, you know, that the soft bigotry of low expectations. When I was an undergrad, when people found out that I was gay, so many of my female classmates are like, you need to come with me to give my boyfriend a makeover. And it's like,
we're all amazing stylists.
Look at how I'm dressed. Do I look like I could give anyone advice on fashion? Like, what are you talking? Well, you're a gay man. You get it. It's like, I can tell you whether or not your boyfriend is someone I want to do or not, but I don't have the vocabulary to explain why or how to convert him from not doable to doable. And even then, if I did, did I ever tell you about the straight man I used to date? I think I did. When I was doing my master's, I briefly dated a straight man.
And was he aware of this?
Yes. Okay. He was, actually. We went on a couple dates. And by a couple, I mean like 5 or 6. And after a while, actually, at the end of the first day, he told me, like, by the way, I'm straight. I was like, why did you agree to go on a date with me? And he said, you know, I recently broke up and it's hard to get back in the game. And you seem like a nice guy. I didn't want to let you down. So, so it was like practice dates because I also came out of a bad relationship at the time. Cute. So, yeah. But everything about him, he seemed like the gayest man you have ever met in your entire life. And then I find out his sister bought his entire wardrobe for him.
Oh, yeah.
He is dressed by a woman. So, like, if you... You know, if a straight man gets fashion advice from a gay man, they're just going to look like a gay man. They're not going to look... Well, they might look like the kind of man that a woman would be into, but it depends on the era. Metrosexuality was big when I was doing my master's, so I don't know. But let's talk about, like, contexts. Are there specific contexts?
Your story reminds me of Bernie Taupin, the writer who wrote a lot of Elton John's biggest hits.
Okay.
In the movie Rocket Man, their relationship, I think, was so brilliantly depicted.
Okay.
Because just beautiful.
Yeah.
Bernie Taupin.
Yeah.
And both Elton John, actually.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, there's every time a show fallen slightly for a straight guy, I could buy a whole bunch of pumpkin spice lattes. Like, you know what I mean? It's
you.
I would have all of the dollars.
Basic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what kind of a but are you a good person, and can you bale hay? Like, that's what they yeah. care about. You yeah. know. You know. Can you fix your own toilet? Yes. Okay. You're a real adult now. Don't care about mm-hmm. the rest. And it's very hard to explain why. I mean, I could explain why, but that'd be the rest of the episode. And it's I-M-U-R.
Yeah.
It looks like it says Imur.
Imur. But yes, we'll be back just after this to wrap up the show. And maybe but you care.
Yeah, I don't want you to feel this weight, but you care. Kiss the taste of salt off my cheek. Can take my pain away. You make it all okay. Baby, you don't walk away, you always stay. Tell me that you love me just the way I am. Hit hard, didn't think that I deserve love until I met you and you showed me the world I love. Me and thought that I could be, darling, you set me free. And I pray, yes, I pray.
Canada's Queer Media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And I don't know. It's, I think we've had an interesting conversation.
Is this the part of the show where we do little news stories that are hard to go into? Because it's that once you tell the title, that's the story.
Oh, I know. I've had a dollar for every song that story that was just the title. One thing that did come up that
we're like, we want to talk about it, but the more you get into detail, there is no detail. The title is the story.
So there was one headline I read which piqued my interest. 13-year-old arrested for homophobic attack that leaves teenager hospitalized is the rough what I recall of the headline.
Okay.
And it was from a news story out of Caernarfon in North Wales.
Okay.
And Caernarfon has the big, giant, beautiful castle.
Right.
It's one of the biggest castles in Wales. It's where the Prince of Wales is. Prince of Wales stuff is.
Don't be fronting.
But yeah, it's a beautiful town. Very heavy on like tourism.
Okay.
And rain. But it's in North Wales. It's kind of rural, hard to get to. It's not particularly there's a poverty issue there for sure. Oh, okay. Absolutely. Okay. But there's a youth group. There's a charity that works at preventing LGBT homelessness across Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And they run a youth group in Caernarfon. Caernarfon's one of the biggest towns or cities in the area. And people come to it, youth go to this youth group from all over North Wales. They drive in to make it to this group. And there's like board games, hanging out, just a nice safe space.
Right.
And the idea is quite simple, and it's something that's worked really well across Canada, is that if you give youth, LGBT youth, a space where they can feel, like I was saying earlier, you said, you know, where do you feel like you're not in the closet?
And
it's like spaces where they know you're gay.
Well, when you're the majority, the minority effect disappears.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really what this group is all about. Yeah. It's about creating a space for these young LGBT people in North Wales to come and spend time. Anyways, unfortunately, at the bus stop just outside of this this youth group, they were attacked by evidently at least one 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Except I'm familiar with Wales and I'm familiar with Britain.
The UK in general has a problem with gangs like this.
And it's a bit rough. And they're you know, the older people, 20s, 30s, you know, maybe they're peddling drugs and mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're doing some of the robberies and so on. And but the gang, not gang violence, but the...
It's not... Yeah, gang violence makes it sound
organized. When people think gang violence, they think of the state, you know, pistols and things. And but in the UK, it's much more, you know...
Roaming youth groups.
Yeah.
No, but that makes it sound like...
Yobbish behavior.
Oh, well, yeah, there you go.
Or chavvy behavior.
Yeah.
And it's that idea of, you know, stealing, petty theft, you know, bringing into cars and... You know, beating people up a little bit.
Like Clockwork Orange, but less fancy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I think happened here, is that this 13-year-old is a part of a larger group of youths of different ages, but he obviously doesn't run as fast as the other ones.
And the kid who got beaten up, chances are it wasn't because he was gay, it's because he was standing there by himself.
No, it was likely the group at the bus stop was targeted because they're gay.
Okay.
Homophobia is a real issue in Wales.
Because that also happens, by the way, where they, like, there was an incident recently in Ottawa where there was a gay man who was, like, violently assaulted, and they held him down and shaved his head and did all sorts of horrible things to him. But the people who attacked him didn't know he was gay. They did it because he was homeless. Mm. And it was more of a class issue in how people treat homeless men, like, just human trash. And later on, they found out that he was gay during...
The trial,
not the trial, during the interview with the police. Mm. So it didn't count as a hate crime. Well, it did count as a hate crime because it was based on class issues, but not as a homophobic crime.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of incidents where like gangs of street involved youth go around beating people up, and they beat them up because they're by themselves, and then they later on find out that they're gay.
Yeah. Well, I think this individual, this teenager, was targeted because he's gay.
Okay.
Or a part of this LGBT youth group. Now, this is a bit of a sad microcosm of what's happening in the UK, where hate crime reporting is much, much higher, except there's very few prosecutions, very few police consequences.
Is reporting up or incidents up? Or
incidents
both?
And reporting is up, but prosecutions have not budged. And now we're going to be looking into what's happening here in Canada. Now, Ottawa has one of the highest reported incident rates in Ontario.
Some of that has to do with the fact that the reporting is higher. The ratio of incidents to reporting is...
Except now we discover there's no hate crimes unit. Yeah. Like, apparently it was all a mirage. But we'll get into that. But it's not just that. It's all across Canada. But is the police action following that? We'll be looking into it ahead of next week's show. We're playing out Mika's Dear Jealousy is a nice track. I think it harkens back to early Mika.
There is one news story from this week that I saw.
Oh, go ahead.
I was like, I knew it. And it's vaguely related because addictions issues runs in the community.
Hold on a second. I think this has stopped.
Oh, my God.
Carry on.
Carry on?
Yep.
It's vaguely related because there's massive addictions problems in the community.
The story that you saw that you want to mention?
But for the past couple of years, I've been thinking they're going to find out that vaping causes pneumonia. I wish I wrote it down because I've just had a bad feeling for the longest time that vaping is going to cause pneumonia. And there have been vaping deaths over the past 2 weeks, all by complications due to pneumonia.
So it hasn't not necessarily causes, but there is a link there which you want to draw our attention to.
Well, yeah, and it's they're not sure. There's certain brands that are causing it, and others are not. But the ones that are causing it, they don't know what's causing it. I have my own theories because the first time I saw the ingredients on a vaping pen, I was like, that's going to cause pneumonia, and it was. But anyway, I wish I had written it down to prove myself right later. But anyway, so.
Well, we have run out of time.
If you're going to smoke, just stick a piece of fire on your face.
Just don't smoke. Just avoid it.
Yeah.
Actually, the CEO of Juul has come out and said, if you weren't smoking before, don't take up Juul. Which is a business proposal. It's a weird thing to say. You know, dear potential customers, don't take my product.
Yeah.
But no, it was interesting. Anyway, this is Mika's Dear Jealousy. And we'll be back next week. I have been
Sebastian. Thank you for listening.
Dear jealousy, why are you smiling creepily? Your fingertips keep holding on, but your tricks won't work on me. Oh, baby, I'm jealous of us. I'm jealous of everything that I know we could be, but never it seems enough. I'm jealous of everyone. Jealous of the man I used to be. And the man I could become. I'm jealous of your fists, of your lips, of your eyes. Jealous of your house and the car you drive. Jealous of your truth and I'm jealous of lies. I'm jealous. Jealous of the ground beneath my feet. Jealous of your mouth and the air we breathe. Jealous of the way that you look at me. I'm jealous. It's coming out to get us. Get us. You better run away while it let us. Cause like it or not, every day we get a little better at jealous. We gon' let it come, amen. Only problem is that it's wrong and every single person, even you with me, is jealousy. Dear jealousy, when did you move in with me? This bed wasn't made for three, it's time for you to leave. Oh baby, I'm jealous of us. I'm jealous of everything that I know we could be, but never it seems enough. Jealous of everyone. Jealous of the man I used to be. And the man I could become. I'm jealous of your face, of your lips, of your eyes. Jealous of your house and the car you drive. Jealous of your truth and I'm jealous of lies. I'm jealous. Jealous of the ground beneath my feet. Jealous of your mouth and the air we breathe. Jealous of the way that you look at me. I'm jealous. It's coming out to get us. Better run away while it let us. Cause like it or not, every day we get a little better at jealousy. We gon' let it come, amen. Only problem is that it's wrong and every single person, even you with me, is jealousy. Jealousy, bring the music back to me. I can't even write a song if you're standing over me.
Dear jealousy.
Jealousy, I'll take the good times with the rough. I don't need to be the richest, I know enough is enough.
Jealousy,
stop confusing me. I am sick of seeing everything in different shades of green.
Jealousy,
it took a while for me to.
at jealousy. We got nothing in common. Only problem is that it's wrong, yeah. And every single person, even you, even me, is jealousy. It's coming out to get us, get us. We better run away while it let us. 'Cause like it or not, every day we get a little better at jealousy.